Hello, you're watching Talking Europe. Everybody knows what NATO is, but you might be a bit unclear on what the NATO Parliamentary Assembly does. Within a few years of NATO's founding in 1949, the idea of the Assembly emerged, and 70 years ago, in July 1955, the first conference of members of Parliament from NATO countries was held in Paris. This established an essential link between NATO and the parliaments of the NATO nations. Since then, parliamentarians have collectively deliberated the problems and challenges facing the alliance. Now the Assembly brings together MPs from 32 NATO member states, Finland and Sweden being the latest countries to join the club. Well, my guest today is the president of the NATO Parliamentary Assembly, Marcos Perestrello, a Portuguese socialist politician. He served twice in Portugal's governments as Secretary of State for National Defence and Maritime Affairs and as Secretary of State for National Defence. And he joins me from Lisbon. Thank you so much for being my guest. Marcos Perestrello, let's start with the escalation in the Middle East after Israel struck dozens of military and nuclear sites in Iran. It's obviously a rapidly evolving situation, but the NATO chief, Mark Rutte, has said it's crucial for NATO allies, including the US, to work to de-escalate. What is your response to that?
I totally agree with Mark Rutte. Mark Rutte made a wise appeal to the NATO countries to contribute to de-escalate this conflict between Israel and Iran. Iran is not a friendly country of NATO, of Europe. Iran is supporting Russia on his war against Ukraine, supplying weapons, deadly weapons, to Russia. Iran is a threat to the region, and is a threat to global security. So and the development of of a nuclear program in Iran will be an even bigger threat to global security.
At the same time, at the same time, Mark Rutte said it was a unilateral action by Israel. Is that a veiled criticism that you share, though?
Yes, and President Trump immediately felt the need to say that although he was previously noticed that the attack will happen, the United States has nothing to do with that. So it was a unilateral decision from Israel, who probably feels more threatened by the Iranian nuclear program, but it was a unilateral decision. There are, as far as we know, ongoing negotiations between Iran and the U.S. regarding that nuclear program. So those negotiations should continue to create an environment favorable in favor of the de-escalation of this conflict that we don't need another conflict in the Middle East add to the situation in Gaza and to the war in Ukraine.
You mentioned the Trump administration, Marcos Perestrello, and when you were elected in November 2024 to your current post, you said you'd work tirelessly to foster the bond between Europe and North America, but it seems you're not getting back very much from the Trump administration. In fact, he's made it pretty clear that Article 5, the cornerstone of NATO's collective defense, doesn't really apply anymore.
No, he didn't let that clear. The United States, if you look at the positions of the United States in different aspects of foreign politics, and if you look at the bilateral relation with the allies, with bilateral relations with other countries from the diplomatic and political point of view, you can clearly see a change of tone, perspective, and attitude from the U.S. that would force everybody to adapt and also make some changes on that relation.
Yeah, and on those it's about changing the level of defense spending. I mean, Trump did say we're not going to...
But Armand, look, yes. but there's also, you can also find severe changes on the American approach regarding commercial relations, and the tariffs issue is quite demanding for everybody. But on what matters NATO and the strategic relation with NATO and the European countries, the position of the U.S. administration has been constant and coherent. They are constantly demanding more investment from the European allies and from Canada. They demand a stronger alliance. And at the end, we want the same. We want a stronger alliance. And to have a stronger alliance, you cannot not rely only on one of the allies. You need a serious contribution from all the allies. So on that, we agree.
On this proposed 5% of GDP spending, which is on the table at the Hague summit of NATO, how realistic do you think that is, given the shortfalls in some member states? For example, Italy is currently under 2%. Portugal last year was under 2% of GDP as well.
Well, there's a commitment. The previous commitment was to reach 2% in 2024. When that commitment was established in 2014, I think that only three countries were on that target. In 2024, 23 countries were on that target. More than two-thirds of the alliance get to the target accorded in 2014. So the credibility of new targets, 5% or 3.5 plus 1.5, because 3.5 is the real hardcore defense spending, personnel, equipment, capabilities. 1.5 is resilience, infrastructure. It's a different kind of industry. It's a different kind of investment. The credibility of that target will depend on the timeline you need to reach them. If you go to The Hague and ask for the countries to reach 5% spending in 2026, that's not credible. But you need a plan to get there, a reasonable plan, a reasonable deadline, because we all know it's very expensive to invest in defense, but it's much more expensive to invest in war. And to avoid war, we need strong defense and strong deterrence.
Yeah, I think what you say about timeline is obviously crucial, because there is a certain urgency now, with the US Secretary of Defense confirming that military aid to Ukraine from the US side will be reduced in the 2026 American budget. And you've spoken about the importance of the EU driving defense capabilities, so not just NATO, but the EU as well, in the areas of research and innovation and procurement. And it's true that more than 3 years into the Ukraine war, the EU still doesn't have a fully fledged European principle within EDIP, the European Defence Investment Programme.
I believe that the European Union should not ambition to replace NATO. European Union has its role, and NATO has its own role too. If each one of them is able to do what knows best to do, the result will be astonishing. If NATO concentrates on defense, on deterrence, if European Union concentrates on helping the member states to create new instruments, able to develop industrial capacities, to make more flexible the pact rules, to allow them to invest and to acquire capabilities, at the end, the European Union will be stronger, the European countries will be stronger, and NATO will be stronger.
Just one quick
What we need to concentrate regarding Ukraine. Sorry, Armand, just sure. to cut to the end of your question. If we want to concentrate on helping Ukraine, we need to be prepared to, if the United States reduce their support, then Europe only has one thing to do. It's to increase their support to Ukraine, because the Ukrainians are fighting for themselves, but they are also fighting for protecting our way of life. NATO and the European Union are, NATO is a military defensive alliance. The European Union is an economic and political and social project based on democratic principles and democratic values. And both organizations should defend them and those principles. And Ukraine is also fighting for those principles, for the right to be free, to self-determination, sovereignty, and being able to let them people, the Ukrainian people, live under a free regime that they can choose. They are looking for the right to choose their own path. They are fighting for them, but they are also fighting for us and for our principles. It is our obligation to support them on that effort.
Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you so much for being my guest today, Marcos Perestrello, the head of the NATO Parliamentary Assembly, joining me from Lisbon. Thanks so much for watching this episode of Talking Europe.